that had fallen. The air resounded with screams and moans. Clooney ranted and swore. Leaving his standard, he rushed across the meadow. Taking the ditch in a single leap, he darted across the road. Grasping a hanging rope, he began hauling himself up, claw over claw. As the solitary beaver gnawed through the last strands, the rope parted. Clooney fell from a fair height and sprawled on the dusty road in an undignified heap. Clooney flung himself into the ditch. Regrouping the sling-throwers and a few archers, he ordered them to await his command. At the top of the walls, the last climbing rope had been severed. A hearty cheer rent the air as the red wall defenders broke cover to survey their handiwork.
"Fire!"
Clooney roared. Stones and arrows sped upward with devastating effect. Several mice and woodlanders cried out and fell. The results heartened Clooney. All was not lost. He began devising a new plan. In Mossflower Wood, Ragear was struggling with the rope that bound him to the oak tree. He could hear far-off sounds which meant only one thing. His chief was attacking the abbey. Straining his neck downwards at an uncomfortable angle, Ragear was able to get his teeth into the tough climbing rope. If he could manage to free himself, he might be able to sneak back and join the horde. He could mingle with them and deny that he'd ever been missing. Clooney might also take a lenient view of his desertion if he could distinguish himself during the battle. The rope tasted foul. Ragear could tell by its scent that it had once belonged to Shadow. He'd never liked that surly, poker-faced rodent. Ragear congratulated himself as his teeth bit through another strand.
"Huh! Take that rope and that! No rope can keep Ragear prisoner for long, hee hee hee! Poor old Shadow! If only you could see your lovely rope now!"
Ragear straightened up for a moment to ease his neck. The laughter died on his lips. A horrified gurgle bubbled from his throat. Icy claws of terror gripped his chest. Swaying hypnotically, a foot from his face was the biggest, strongest, most evil-looking adder that had ever been born. The rat was completely petrified. The breath seemed to freeze in his lungs. The sinister blunt head moved in a lazy rhythm, its forked tongue flickering endlessly in and out, the round, bead-like jet eyes never leaving his for an instant. Its voice was like dry leaves rustling in an autumn breeze.
"Asmodeus! Asmodeus!"
it hissed.
"So kind of you to untie yourself, rat. Come with me. I will show you eternity. Asmodeus! Asmodeus!"
It struck with lightning speed. All that Ragear felt was a sudden sharp sting to the side of his neck. His limbs became flaccid, his eyesight shrouded by a dark mist. The last words Ragear ever heard on this earth were uttered in the adder's sibilant hiss.
"Asmodeus! Asmodeus!"
Clooney scratched the floor of the ditch with his claw. It was all there, the design for his next move. He would attack the abbey secretly from the Mossflower side. It would be a surprise maneuver. A hand-picked squad led by him would carry out the mission. Dressed in Clooney's war helmet and armor, Red Tooth would stay back in the meadow. His disguise would be sufficient to fool the defenders from the distance of the high walls. The rats in the ditch were ordered to continue pressing home the attack until Clooney and his party scaled the walls from behind and fought their way across the grounds to open the abbey gates. After issuing orders to his remaining captains, Clooney, accompanied by a score of assorted rats, weasels, stoats, and ferrets, crept off along the course of the ditch. They carried with them the long plank from St. Ninian's lich-gate fence. Silently, they travelled in a northerly direction, until they were out of sight of the walls. Climbing out of the ditch, they crossed the road into Mossflower Wood. Clooney sat on a fallen tree trunk and told his squad what was required of them.
"I'll wait here with the plank carriers. The rest of you, split up and search the area for any big high trees growing near the abbey walls. Make sure that the tree you pick is higher than the wall itself and not too difficult to climb. Got that? Right. Get going."
Clooney watched them strike off into the undergrowth. His previous good mood had deserted him. He was working himself into a foul temper over the day's performance by his mighty conquering horde. Shown up by the simple tactics of woodland creatures and mice, he snorted and dug his powerful claws into the rotten tree trunk, sending beetles and woodlice scurrying as he tore out a chunk of the spongy timber. Oh, he had had them frightened at first. As a commander, he knew the power of fright, but once they had gained the upper hand in the initial skirmish, the mice lost their fear and became bolder. That was when the battle had started to go against him. Granted, he had scored one or two small victories, but they were nothing to brag about. He couldn't use them as an example to put fresh heart in his troops. Clooney's only hope was that the mice would become overconfident and eventually make a mistake. It was the old waiting game. Just let them make one slip. That was all he needed. Meanwhile, he had a greater obstacle to overcome than mice. The walls. It was those same accursed walls that were ruining all his plans. Clooney tore viciously at the rotting log until great chunks of it flew through the air. If this scheme worked, he wouldn't have to worry about walls anymore. He would be inside those walls like a fox among day-old chickens. Clooney sniffed the air. His senses told him the searchers were returning. Cheese Thief and a ferret named Kilconi came crashing out of the underbrush. They were trembling and twitching. Both looked as if they had been badly scared. It was some time before Clooney could get any sense out of them. Cheese Thief spoke haltingly, glancing back fearfully over his shoulder.
We got a bit lost, Chief.
Lost? Where? Clooney snarled.
Kilconi pointed a shaky claw.
Over that way, Your Honor, and didn't we find a great strapping oak?
Was it close to the wall?
Cheese Thief shook his head.
No, Chief. It was further out, into the woods. Look what I found wrapped around the trunk.
He held out the chewed and broken climbing rope. Clooney snatched it.
This looks like Shadow's climbing rope. He's dead. What are you fools trying to tell me?
Kilconi whimpered pitifully.
It's Ruggier, Your Honor.
Clooney seized the unlucky pair and shook them soundly.
Have you both gone raving mad? Do you mean to tell me you're frightened at that fool, Ruggier?
Cheese Thief fell to his knees, sobbing.
But you didn't see him, Chief. He was just lying there. His face was all swollen, and his tongue was sticking out. It had gone purple. Ugh. It was all sort of bloated-like. It was horrible.
Kilconi bobbed his head vigorously in agreement.
I saw twas. Didn't we see him with our own very eyes, sir? Poor old Ruggier, and him going backwards all the time.
Going backwards? Echoed Clooney.
Indeed he was, said the ferret. And your man here says to me, says he, there's something pulling Ruggier along. Sure, we couldn't see what it was for all the bushes, so we pulled them to one side between us. And what did we see?
Well, what did you see?
Barked Clooney irritably. Kilconi stopped and shuddered. He spoke incredulously, as if he were unable to believe himself.
We saw the biggest snake you ever clapped eyes on. The father of all serpents.
He had poor Ragir's body by the feet and was dragging it along backwards. Clooney's one eye widened.
What did this serpent do when it saw you?
It let go of Ragir and looked at us, squeaked Cheese Thief. The serpent stared at us. It kept on saying, Asmodeus, Asmodeus.
Clooney scratched his head with a sharp, dirty claw.
Asmodeus? What's that supposed to mean?
Do you not know? 'Tis the dreaded name of the devil himself, sir,
wailed the ferret.
I know, because me old mother told me so, and she always said never to look a serpent in the eye. So I says to me mate here, Cheese Thief, says I, don't look, run for your life. And that's exactly what we did, sir. Oh, you'll never know how horrible it was. I'd rather be tied in a blazing barn than go back there, so I would.
The great scaly body of the... Quiet, fool, said Clooney. I think I hear the others coming back. Now, straighten yourselves up, and not a word to anyone about this serpent thing, or you'll feel my serpent across your backs.
Clooney's long tail waved menacingly under their noses. They took his point. A weasel called Scrag came running up. He reported smartly with great efficiency.
High tree near the abbey wall, chief. Elm, I think. Much higher than the wall. Lots of branches jutting out. Just the job for climbing.
How far to this tree? Clooney asked.
About 10 minutes' march to the east,
Scrag replied. When the rest of the party arrived back, Clooney had them form up in a single file. They marched eastwards at a smart pace. The high tree did prove to be an elm, an ancient giant covered in gnarled bumps and handy branches. Clooney sized it up. Exactly what he wanted, the perfect distance from the wall. He turned to his commander squad.
Listen, we're going to climb this tree. When we get up high enough, I'll find a strong branch that we can bridge to the wall with a plank. If we go carefully, the mites won't suspect a thing. Before they gather their wits about them, we'll be inside Redwall.
Chapter 19. It was difficult to tell who was more surprised, Matthias and his party or the rat sentries. There was a second's pause, then they scattered. One or two of the rats were a bit slow off the mark, but not as slow as Colin Vole and his mother, who were roughly grabbed by the faster sentries. Matthias dodged, wriggled, and ran free, tripping a rat who was about to seize Mr. Vole. The young mouse ran, pushing the vole in front of him and calling out,
"Run! Keep going! Mr. Vole! Try to make it to the woods and hide!"
The vole faltered.
"But my wife, Colin, the rats have got them."
Matthias pushed him roughly forward.
"They'll get you too if you don't hurry. Move yourself, Vole. You'll be no good to your family as a prisoner again."
Taking Matthias's advice, Abram Vole ran as fast as his legs would carry him. Matthias turned and picked up a heavy branch. He faced the oncoming rats.
"Only a dozen of you?" he taunted. "Let's see what you rats are made of. First come, first served."
Matthias swung the branch. It whooshed through the air, causing the rats to stop in their tracks. As he advanced on them, flailing the branch, he shouted at the top of his voice,
"Basil! Basil Stag Hare, where are you?"
The rats tried to circle Matthias. One got too near. A hefty blow from the improvised staff sent him crashing to the ground.
"Oh, well hit, sir. Jolly well hit."
It was the hare. He came bounding up, for all the world as if he were on a Sunday school picnic, grinning from ear to ear. Colin and Mrs. Vole came panting in his wake. Matthias gasped with relief.
"Basil, where in heaven's name did you get to?"
The skillful creature dodged a rat, spun round, and landed a fierce double-footed kick to its stomach. The rat bowled over, completely winded, all the fight knocked out of its body. Basil chuckled.
Sorry about that, Matthias, my old lad. When these chaps gave up chasing me, I scooted back to my den. Spring cleaning, you know. A bit late, but I'm only a bachelor in single quarters, what?
Matthias was flabbergasted. Here he was, fighting off a dozen rats, trying to rescue the Vole family, while Basil was dusting out his den. The young mouse could scarcely hold his temper.
"Oh, how nice of you, Mr. Hare. So glad you could join us," he said sarcastically as they beat off rats and hurried the voles along. "I don't suppose you put the kettle on for tea?"
Basil bowed to Mrs. Vole and offered her his paw.
"Allow me, ma'am. Why, yes, as a matter of fact, I did. Nothing like a fresh pot of mint tea after some good healthy exercise, what?"
Matthias struck a rat square in the face with the butt of his branch. The hare was obviously insane. Mint tea, indeed.
"Well, I don't suppose you think I'm going to sit in your den drinking tea all afternoon?" he yelled.
Basil had a hammerlock on a rat. He swung him and knocked two more flat on the ground. He winked at Matthias.
"I certainly hope not, old bean. You see, it'd be perishing awkward, as I've only got a four-piece tea set. And if I'm not mistaken, the small gent who took off for the woods like a scalded duck is obviously the husband of this delightful Lady Vole. So I'll have to invite him too, won't I?"
Matthias tripped a rat with a branch. He was learning to take Basil in his stride.
"Why, of course you will, Mr. Hare. What a bore you must think me. I'll probably sit around on the common here and teach the rats to make daisy chains."
Basil dodged around a rat and laughed approvingly.
"No need to get uppity, young fella. I thought I'd best shelter the voles and see 'em safe to the abbey later. Obviously, you need to get back to Redwall post-haste. A family of voles would only slow you up."
Matthias grinned ruefully.
"I apologize, sir. I accept your offer of help gratefully. I didn't mean to be rude."
By now they were at the edge of the common land. The rats had fallen back momentarily. Basil shook paws with Matthias.
"Good mouse. Right, cut along, young'un. I'll see you when I deliver my charges back to the abbey."
Alone and unencumbered, Matthias struck off into the woods. Travelling doggedly on wearied legs, he realized that his entry to Redwall would have to come from the Mossflower side, as the main gate would probably be under attack. Could the defenders hold out? Was Constance organizing the retaliation correctly without him? Had the sentries stayed alert? Was Cornflower safe? Questions raced through Matthias's brain as he fought his way through the undergrowth. Taking a check on his bearings, he began to worry a little. The abbey walls should be in sight, over toward the northwest. Perhaps he hadn't fully realized the sprawling size of the woodlands. Yes, that was it. Maybe if he kept on trekking, the walls would soon come into view. From somewhere ahead, Matthias could hear the trickle and gurgle of a stream. He remembered that it had been some time since he had eaten and drunk. Changing direction, he followed the water sounds until he came to the banks of the stream. Lying face down on a low outcrop of red sandstone, Matthias drank his fill of the cool, sweet stream water. Further down the bank, he found some young dandelions. Gathering a bunch of tender leaves and buds, he made his way back to the sun-warm sandstone and stretched out on his back, nibbling dandelions and gazing up at the cloudless blue June sky through the treetops. What an action-packed day it had been. Matthias was glad of the brief respite after all the excitement, but he told himself that he could not afford to stay long. He must press on to Redwall. He heaved a great sigh. The life of a warrior was very tiring. Closing his eyes momentarily, he thought of Martin the Warrior. Did he ever feel tired? He must have, defending the abbey with his large, heavy sword, wearing all that armor. Whatever happened to the sword? It had to be somewhere. Legendary weapons didn't rust and wear away to nothing. Otherwise, they'd never get to be legends. A dragonfly hovered directly above the young mouse, gently stirring his whiskers. What was this strange creature doing in his territory? He glided a little closer. It was quite safe. The oddly garbed animal posed no threat to his authority as bailiff of this stretch of water. He was fast asleep, snoring like a squirrel in midwinter, oblivious to all about him. Chapter 20. It was late afternoon. There had been one or two minor setbacks, but Clooney and his squad had finally made it up into the elm tree. Some of the rats were really hopeless climbers in Clooney's estimation. There had been quite a bit of jostling and slipping, and as for that idiot cheese thief, imagine waiting until you were 6 yards above the ground to find out that you were afraid and had no head for heights. Clooney thought angrily that if there hadn't been such an urgent need for silence, he'd have given him what for. The warlord began to wish that he had brought along more ferrets and weasels. They possessed good natural climbing ability, and that weasel, what was his name? Scrag. He'd been an enormous help, boosting and encouraging the others, even organizing the lifting up of the plank. Clooney made a mental note for future reference. Officer material, that one. Despite all efforts, however, they were still below the edge of the parapet. Higher up, the elm branches became thin and whippy, not strong enough to support the plank's weight. Clooney took stock of the situation. This was really as far as he could go without still retaining some kind of safety factor on their hazardous assignment. He decided to call a halt.
Right. Take a breather. Find somewhere that you won't fall from. In an hour or two, it'll be evening. There'll be lots of shadow and less daylight. The mice will have slowed up a bit by then. We'll catch them off guard. Scrag, see this lot keep still and quiet, will you?
Scrag saluted smartly and offered a helpful comment.
This branch I'm sitting on, Chief. I've just been testing it, and it feels good and strong. Maybe we should mount the plank from here to the wall. It'll reach easily enough. I know it's a bit of an uphill climb, but it shouldn't be too difficult. I don't fancy those branches higher up. They're too thin.
Clooney climbed across and sat next to Scrag. He spoke in a whisper.
Good thinking, Weasel. Yes, this branch'll do fine. Stick by me, Scrag. You're a useful soldier. With some of the blockheads I've got around me, I could be on the lookout for a new captain soon. You know what that means. Extra loot, a bigger share of the plunder. Clooney always rewards initiative, Scrag. Play your cards right, and you'll soon get promotion.
Thanks, Chief. Don't worry, I won't let you down, Scrag murmured.
On a lower branch, Cheese Thief, who had been eavesdropping on the conversation, sneered inwardly. Yes, Chief. No, Chief. Three bags full, Chief. Who did that snotty weasel think he was? And as for Clooney, promoting a weasel to captain over rats of his own kind, well, Red Tooth and Dark Claw and the others might have something to say about that. Upstart weasel. He'd only joined up a day or two ago. If he got half the chance, Cheese Thief would fix Scrag all right. Abbot Mortimer looked thankfully up at the sky. Evening had come. They had lasted out well. The rats had not breached the wall in any way. Most of the main fighting had gone into a lull. Clooney's horde was only making spasmodic sallies from the ditch now. Taking advantage of the interval, the defenders hauled up more rocks and rubble to the ramparts. Cornflower and her band of helpers were on top of the walls. Keeping their heads low, they moved from post to post, serving each creature with a bowl of stew, some wild grapes, and a small loaf of honeyed nut bread.
"What a calm, efficient young mouse Cornflower is," the abbot remarked to Constance.
The badger passed a bundle of arrows to Ambrose Spike for distribution as she replied,
"Aye, that she is, Father Abbot. But she looks worried. Matthias, do you think?"
"Doubtless," the abbot said dryly. "That young mouse is on my mind as well as hers and yours." Constance shook her large striped head.
"It's not like Matthias to go off like that. I've searched everywhere my spare moments, but he's not in the abbey."
"Well, wherever he is," the abbot replied, "I'm certain that he is helping our cause, so we'll just have to await his return, and trust to Matthias's judgment and good sense." The two friends thankfully accepted food from Cornflower and her helpers. Both watched, mystified, as Winifred the Otter and Formal hoisted and pulled a seesaw into view. It was a plaything, made in the distant past for the use of infant woodlanders. It had lain near the strawberry patch for as long as anyone could remember. Baby animals played on it throughout the year. As a seesaw, it was in perfect working order. Winifred and Formal set it down on the parapet. Bent double, the two moles staggered up, carrying between them an enormous rock. Formal indicated the opposite end of the seesaw.
"Ah, Perimther, that's a nice boulder, my beauties."
When the boulder was in position, Winifred and Formal hugged each other tightly. With a nod, they jumped heavily on the near seat.
Whoosh!
The big rock catapulted over the top of the parapet. Several seconds of silence followed. Then there was a crash, accompanied by screams of pain and shock from the rats packed into the ditch below. Winifred and Formal gravely shook paws.
"You're, I reckon, the pesky varmint's gotten an headache," chuckled Formal, as everybody on the ramparts ran to seek cover from the retaliatory missiles hurled by Clooney's horde.
The battle had started again in earnest. Mouse archers sprang up and loosed their shafts down towards the ditch. Otter sling-throwers whipped hard pebbles off with fierce rapidity. Long rat javelins flew upwards, causing death and injury in the ranks of the defenders. But now there was a new hazard. Some inventive rat had devised a fearsome weapon. Chunks of iron grave railings from the churchyard strung to lengths of cord. The rats would swing the cord round and around, gaining momentum, until, judging the right direction, they loosed the cord. The missiles sped upwards, two or three times higher than the wall, almost out of sight. Then they would plummet downwards, whistling viciously to burst on the ramparts. Any defender struck by a missile was either instantly killed or horribly maimed. Even if the iron missed its target, the stones and shattered metal fragments ricocheted about dangerously. Realizing the danger of this new device, Constance ordered all but a chosen few to leave the wall for the safety of the abbey grounds. However, the strung iron bit soon proved to be a two-edged weapon. Many that were released wrongly came hurtling back down into the ditch, sometimes slaying the very creatures that had hurled them. Even Redtooth, in Clooney's armor, guarding the standard in the meadow, had to make an undignified scurry to avoid being hit. But he could see the demoralizing effect the missiles were having on the defenders, so he ordered the throwers to continue. Constance bravely stood her ground on the parapet, as did her small band of picked fighters. Whenever one of the missiles landed intact on the rubble pile, she would seize it, standing in full view as she whirled the corded iron round and round, releasing it in a blur of speed. Constance was a far more powerful and accurate thrower than any rat. The attackers bared angry fangs at her from the cover of the ditch. Of all the Red Wall defenders, the big badger was the one they most hated and feared. Seated in the branches of the elm tree at the north wall of the abbey, Clooney watched the shadows lengthen. To the west, the sky was crimson with sunset. Soon he would raise the plank to the parapet, then let them beware. No tin-pot order of mice was going to stand against the might of Clooney the Scourge. Methuselah, the gatekeeper, stood facing the damaged tapestry in the great hall of Redwall. Being too old for active battle service, he reasoned that the best way he could serve his order was by putting his fertile brain to work. Somewhere there had to be at least a clue, a single lead that might tell him where the resting place of Martin the Warrior could be found, or where he could regain possession of the ancient sword for his abbey. But where? Every now and then over the years, Methuselah had searched through Redwall for Martin and his sword. Now he stepped up his questing activities, alas, with no success. Vital clues and answers still eluded him. What he needed was a younger, fresher mind to assist him. What a pity that Matthias could not be found. Now there was a young mouse with a head on his shoulders. Long years and much mental strain had taken their toll on the ancient mouse. Wearily he swayed on his feet, and putting out a paw to steady himself, he touched the wall. The exact patch of stone over which Martin's likeness had once hung. Methuselah gave a sigh of satisfaction, and allowed a small smile to creep across his features. His search had not been in vain. Beneath his paw, there was writing carved into the dust-covered wall. Book 2, The Quest. Chapter 1. Matthias came awake slowly. He blinked, yawned, and stretched his body luxuriously. The sun was setting, turning the little stream into a flow of molten red and gold, tinged with deep shadow. He lay calm, savoring the peace and quiet of the woodland summer evening. Reality struck him like a thunderbolt. He sprang to his feet, instantly forgetting the beauty that surrounded him. Lying there snoring and sleeping like a lazy little idiot, and all the while Redwall Abbey and his friends were under attack. Furious with himself, Matthias strode off angrily into the darkening trees. He could find no words strong enough to express his self-contempt. It was not until he had blundered and crashed along his way for some time, wildly upbraiding himself, that he calmed down, with the realization that he was well and truly lost. No tree, path, or landmark looked remotely familiar. He despaired of ever seeing Redwall again. Night closed in on the small mouse, wandering alone in the depths of Mossflower Wood. Strange, imaginary shapes flitted about in the gloom. Eerie cries pierced the still air. Trees and bushes reached out their branches to catch and scratch like living things with claws. Trembling, Matthias took refuge in an old beech trunk that had once been riven by lightning. Gradually, he became critical of himself again. The great warrior, frightened of the dark like a baby church mouse? From somewhere overhead, he heard a scratching noise. Summoning up all his courage, he banished his fears. Drawing Shadow's dagger, he stepped out into the open, calling aloud in what he hoped was a gruff voice. "Who's doing all that scratching and scraping? Come out and show yourself if you are a friend. But if it's a rat out there, then you'd best start running, otherwise you'll have to deal with me, Matthias, a warrior of Redwall." Having spoken his piece, Matthias felt his confidence surge back. He stood tense and alert. However, he received no answer, save the mocking echo of his own voice ringing back at him through the dark woodlands. A slight noise at his back caused Matthias to wheel about with the dagger upraised. He found himself confronted by a baby red squirrel. It gazed up at him curiously, sucking noisily on its paw. Matthias practically dropped the dagger through laughing so much. So this was the nameless terror that stalked the night. The tiny creature continued sucking its paw. Shifting from foot to foot, its bushy tail curled up over the small back, higher than the tips of its ears. Matthias stooped, speaking gently for fear of frightening the infant. "Hello there. My name's Matthias. What's yours?" The baby squirrel continued sucking on its paw. "Do your mummy and daddy know you're out?" It nodded its head. "Are you lost, little one?" It shook its head. "Do you talk?" It shook its head. "Do you often wander about like this at night?" It nodded. Matthias smiled disarmingly. He threw his paws open wide. "I'm lost," he said. The paw-sucking continued without comment. "I come from Redwall Abbey." Suck, suck, suck. "Do you know where that is?" The baby squirrel nodded. Matthias was overjoyed. "Oh, my little friend, please could you show me the way?" he asked. It nodded. "Thank you very much." The tiny squirrel hopped and shuffled a short way into the woods. Turning to Matthias, it took its paw from its mouth and beckoned him to follow. He needed no second urging. Suck, suck, suck. "Well, at least," Matthias thought aloud, "if I lose sight of this fellow, I'll be able to hear him." The baby squirrel smiled and nodded and sucked. Chapter 2. Abbot Mortimer sat in the grass of the abbey cloisters. All around him the defenders, who had been sent down from the wall, lay in slumber. Not knowing when the rats were going to stop fighting, and realizing that they might not, the kindly abbot advised those who had been relieved to try and get some sleep. Methuselah came shuffling up. With a sigh and a groan, he sat down on the grass alongside his abbot, who greeted him courteously.
"Good evening, Brother Methuselah."
The old gatehouse keeper adjusted his spectacles and sniffed the air.
"And a good evening to you, Father Abbot. How goes the battle against the rats?"
The abbot folded his paws within his wide sleeves.
"It goes well for us, old one. Though how I can say that anything goes well which causes death and injury to living creatures is beyond me. We live in strange times, my friend."
Methuselah grinned and wrinkled his nose.
"But still it goes well?"
"Indeed it does. But why do you smile, Methuselah? What secret are you keeping from me?"
"Ah, Father Abbot, you read me like a book. I do have a secret, but trust me, all will be made known to you in the fullness of time."
The abbot shrugged. "No doubt it will. But please make it soon. We are not getting any younger, you and I."
"Come now," said Methuselah. "Compared with me, you are still a mouse in your prime. Yet, like many others that think my senses are failing, you cannot see half the things that my old eyes observe."
"How so?"
inquired the abbot. Methuselah touched a paw to his nose knowingly.
"For instance, did you notice that there is a southerly breeze tonight? No, I don't suppose you did. Then look at the top of that old elm tree sticking up above the wall. Yes, that one over by the small door. Tell me what you see."
The abbot's eyes followed Methuselah's paw until he saw the tree in question. He studied it for a moment, then turned to the old mouse.
"I see the top of an old elm tree growing out in the woods. But what is unusual about that?"
Methuselah shook his head reprovingly.
"He still cannot see, dear me. If the breeze is blowing from the south, then the elm tree would move its leaves and branches in a northerly direction, as it has always done. But that particular tree is choosing to disobey nature. It's swaying from east to west. This can mean only one thing. Somebody is using that tree for a purpose. At least, that is what I think. Do you agree?"
Without replying or showing any sign of alarm whatsoever, the abbot arose. Walking calmly over to the gatehouse wall, he beckoned silently to Constance. The badger descended the steps. She held a whispered conference with the abbot, nodding in the direction of the elm. Less than a minute later, Constance, accompanied by Winifred the Otter, Ambrose Spike, and a few others, padded carefully along the top of the wall, taking great pains not to be seen. On the woodland side, Clooney whispered commands to his followers as they pushed the plank towards the wall from their perch in the elm tree.
"Steady now, cheese thief, you moron. Keep your end up. Keep it going upwards, not down."
Cheese thief struggled to obey. It was all right for the chief sitting back there giving out his orders. He didn't have to balance with one claw while pushing a silly plank about with the other. Cheese thief slipped. With a squeak of dismay, he let go of the plank. It clattered against a branch. Fortunately, Scrag the Weasel was on the alert. He caught the end of the plank, steadying it. Cheese Thief regained his balance and clung miserably to his perch as Clooney hissed in rage at him.
"Clown, bungling buffoon, get out of the way. Shift your fat idle carcass and let Scrag take over."
Burning with resentment, Cheese Thief was shoved unceremoniously aside. Clooney aimed a kick at him as the efficient weasel took his place.
"You just sit there and be still," Clooney snarled, "and try not to make enough noise to waken the entire abbey."
Scrag moved with skill and economy, issuing quiet, confident directions to the others.
"Up a bit, left a touch, take it forward, steady now, good, hold it."
The long plank snaked out and upwards, coming to rest gently but firmly on the parapet edge. Scrag saluted Clooney.
"Plank in position and ready, chief."
Cheese Thief shot Scrag a venomous glance. Clooney climbed onto the plank and tested it. The improvised bridge wobbled and sprang a bit, but it held. Clooney turned to the raiding party.
"I'll go first. We'd better have only one at a time on the plank. When I'm on the parapet, I'll steady the other end. Scrag, you come next. The rest of you follow."
Clooney held on to branches for as long as he could. Soon he was out on the middle of the plank with nothing to steady him. Trying hard not to glance downwards at the dizzying drop, he inched his way up the plank towards the wall. Clooney was almost in reach of his goal when Constance appeared on the parapet. She gave the plank a mighty kick, sending it off into space. With a shout of dismay, Clooney plunged earthwards, snapping branches as he went. Winifred fired off a pebble from her sling, knocking a ferret clean out of his perch into empty space. Scrag still held one end of the plank. He leaned precariously out from the elm to see where Clooney fell. Seizing his opportunity for revenge, Cheese Thief shoved Scrag hard in the back. The weasel dropped like a stone with the plank on top of him. Clooney's followers were kicking at each other and screaming as they tried to clamber down from the high elm branches. Leaning across the parapet, Constance and her friends watched the panic-stricken animals descending. Winifred the otter managed to speed up the retreat with a few well-aimed stones from her sling. The defenders viewed their work with grim satisfaction. Ambrose Spike squinted short-sightedly down at the darkened woodland floor. He tried to assess the casualties.
"How many did we get?" he inquired.
"Hard to tell in this light," replied Winifred. "But I'd swear that was Clooney Constance tipped off the plank."
The badger's brow creased. She shot a quizzical glance at the otter.
"So, you saw him too? I'm glad you did. I thought I was seeing double for a moment back there. How could Clooney be in two places at once? I'm sure I saw him standing in the meadow not 10 minutes ago."
Winifred shrugged.
"Well, let's just hope that it was Clooney. Personally, I'd like to think that he's lying somewhere down there now, dead as a doornail."
Constance peered downwards.
"Difficult to say, really. There seem to be around half a dozen or so laid out down there. Can't tell for sure. Too much shadow and darkness. Still, I don't think any creature could survive a fall from this height."
"Maybe we'd better go and see," suggested Ambrose.
The defenders looked towards Constance.
Maybe not, said the Badger thoughtfully. No, I don't like it. It suddenly strikes me that this could be a diversionary tactic to draw us away from the gatehouse wall. If it was Clooney who fell from the plank, all well and good, but if it wasn't, then he's still around the front. It won't serve any useful purpose counting dead bodies. Let's get back to the main action.
Led by Constance, the defenders filed hurriedly off. Cheese Thief slunk cautiously out of the undergrowth. It was safe to move now. The woodlanders had gone from the parapet. Behind him, limping and complaining, came the survivors of the ill-fated raiding party. Cheese Thief ignored them as he moved among the bodies that had fallen from the high branches. Four rats, a ferret, and one weasel. Three of the rats and the ferret were dead. They lay where they had fallen, their limbs in grotesque positions. The survivors immediately pounced upon the bodies of their fallen comrades, plundering weapons and objects of clothing that they had coveted. Cheese Thief stood riveted by the single eye. Clooney was alive. Beneath the plank, Scrag stirred and groaned. Amazingly, he too had survived. Cheese Thief sprang into action, surprised that Scrag still lived, but fatalistically accepting that nothing could kill Clooney.
Quick! Get that plank over here, you lot. We've got to get the chief out of here.
Using the plank as an improvised stretcher, they carefully lifted Clooney onto it. Cheese Thief knew Clooney was watching him. Tenderly, he lifted the dangling tail and arranged it gently alongside his leader.
Try not to move, Chief. Lie still. We'll soon get you back to camp.
The stretcher-bearers moved off slowly through the woods. Cheese Thief avoided Clooney's eye. An idea was taking form in his mind. He sniffed piteously, wiping an imaginary tear from his cheek.
Poor old Scrag. What a good weasel. I think he's still alive. Listen, you lot, carry on and get the chief home safely. I'll double back and see if I can help Scrag.
Cheese Thief sniggered to himself as the survivors disappeared into the night, carrying Clooney on the plank. Matthias followed the baby squirrel through bramble and bush. Whenever he tried to communicate, all that he received was a nod or a shake of the tiny creature's head. They had been traveling for quite a long time. As the pale fingers of dawn crept across the sky, Matthias was beginning to doubt that his companion knew the way. Then suddenly, the little fellow pointed to the east with his paw. In the distance, Matthias could make out the shape of the abbey.
"There's no place like home," he said thankfully. "What a splendid pathfinder you are, my friend."
Still sucking his paw, the small squirrel smiled shyly. He took hold of Matthias's tail as they went forwards together, the mouse talking animatedly, the squirrel nodding vigorously.
"I'll take you to Friar Hugo's kitchen and see that he gives you the nicest breakfast you've ever had. Now what do you say to that?"
Suck, suck, nod, nod. When Matthias arrived at the wall, he felt like patting the old red sandstone. He turned to his companion.
"This is where I live."
A noise nearby caused them both to freeze momentarily. It sounded like some creature groaning. Instinctively, Matthias and the squirrel ducked down among the ferns. Cautiously, they crept along in the direction of the sounds. Silently parting the ferns, they gazed in horror at the dreadful scene around the base of the elm tree. Among the dead animals that lay stretched in unnatural attitudes was a badly injured weasel. He was moaning and twitching fitfully. Before either of the friends could decide what to do, a rat appeared on the scene. They remained motionless. Cheese Thief was in a cheery mood. He hummed happily under his breath
as he prodded Scrag with his foot.
"Scrag, wake up. It's me, Cheese Thief."
"Oh, come on now. I'm sure you remember me.
The stupid one. The rat whose job you were going to take."
Scrag's eyes were barely open. He groaned in agony. Cheese Thief cocked a mockingly sympathetic ear.
"What's that, Scrag, my old mate? Tired, are you?"
"Yes, you must be, lying there like that.
Tell you what, I'll help you go to sleep, shall I?"
The rat placed his foot on the weasel's throat and began pressing down. Scrag struggled feebly, fighting for breath, unable to stop his tormentor. Cheese Thief took malicious pleasure in his revenge. Cruelly, he leaned his full weight upon the weasel's rasping throat.
"Hush now. Go to sleep, Scrag. Dream of the command you never had."
Scrag made one final gurgling whimper and lay still. Cheese Thief slunk off, chuckling with satisfaction. Hidden in the ferns, Matthias and the baby squirrel held their breath in disbelief. They had seen murder committed. Matthias and the squirrel waited until they were sure the coast was clear. At last they emerged from the ferns, and Matthias, cupping his paws round his mouth, ventured a low hello up the wall. There was no reply. The little squirrel shook his head. He pointed to the floor with his paw in a gesture that Matthias interpreted as, "Stop here." With breathtaking speed and skill, the tiny creature raced up the trunk of the old elm. Reaching the thin branches above the parapet, he ran out along one. Using it as a springboard, he bounced nimbly onto the ramparts and vanished, sucking fiercely at his paw. Matthias had not long to wait before the small door in the wall nearby grated open on its rusty hinges, and Constance peered cautiously out. Seeing Matthias, she ran to greet him with the little squirrel perched upon her back. Matthias was not sure what sort of reception was in store for him. He need not have worried. Constance hugged him, patted his back, and shook him by the paw. The badger forestalled the explanation that was upon the young mouse's lips. She beckoned Matthias inside, shutting the door behind them.
"You can tell us everything later, Matthias. Right now, I insist that you come to the main gate. There's something you must see."
A minute or two later, all three were standing on the gatehouse wall, shoulder to shoulder with countless other defenders. Cluny's horde was retreating back down the road to their camp at St. Ninian's Church. There was a wild cheering from the ranks of the mice and woodlanders. Cluny was being borne upon the plank in the midst of his army. Redtooth, who was still disguised in the warlord's battle armor, had draped a blanket over Cluny to hide him and keep up the masquerade. But nobody was fooled. Both sides of the wall had heard the tale of misadventure in all its gory detail. They knew that the strutting rat in armor was not Cluny the Scourge. Redtooth nevertheless strode proudly along. Cluny might not recover. Besides, he reveled in the respect that he received, dressed as he was in such barbaric finery. He knew that it was only borrowed plumage, but he could always hope that the position might become permanent. On top of the gatehouse ramparts, feelings ran high. The abbot had issued strict orders that no missiles or weaponry be discharged at the enemy in retreat. Amid the cheering, there was quite a bit of resentful grumbling. Why not smash Cluny's army once and for all? Now that they were on the run, this was the proper time to consolidate a resounding Red Wall victory. But the good Father Abbot would not hear of it. Like a true gentle mouse, he believed in tempering triumph with mercy. The jubilatory sounds died away to an eerie silence as the rats toiled raggedly off down the road, raising a column of dust in the early dawn. dispirited and battle-worn, carrying their fallen leader, the maimed and wounded hobbled painfully along at the rear, the bitter ashes of vanquishment and defeat mingling with the dust from their stumbling vanguard. Even the silent victors began to realize that victory came at a high price. Freshly dug graves and a crowded infirmary bore silent witness to the reality of war. Matthias felt a gentle paw intertwining with his own. It was Cornflower. Relief showed in her eyes and her voice.
"Oh, Matthias, thank goodness you are back safe. It was dreadful not knowing where you were or what had become of you. I thought you'd never come back."
"I'm like an old bare penny. I always come back," Matthias whispered.
"Oh, by the way, how is your father?"
Cornflower brightened up.
"He's made a marvellous recovery. He refused to lie in bed and has been up on the wall helping out. You can't keep a good field mouse down, my dad always says."
Matthias barely had time to bid Cornflower a hasty goodbye before he was ushered off to the abbot's room for an early morning conference. He took his seat and looked around the table. There were Constance, Ambrose, Winifred, Formole, the abbot, and also his friend the baby squirrel. He stood on a stool, dipping his paw into a bowl of milk and honey, sucking it with noisy enjoyment.
"I think that you would have been in trouble without Silent Sam here, Matthias," the abbot said.
The young mouse nodded.
"I certainly would, Father Abbot." "So, that's his name, Silent Sam? Well, he certainly lives up to it."
"Indeed he does," replied the abbot. "His mother and father are old friends of mine. They'll pick up his tracks and be along here later to collect him. Do you know, this little chap hasn't spoken since he was born. I've tried every remedy known to Redwall on him, but none has worked. So he was named Silent Sam. But don't let that fool you. He knows Mossflower Wood like the back of his paw, don't you, Sam?"
The tiny squirrel licked his paw and smiled. He indicated a large circle with it, pointing at himself with his unsticky paw. Matthias reached over and shook the paw heartily.
"My thanks to you, Silent Sam. You are truly the great pathfinder."
During the meeting, there was much useful information exchanged. Matthias told of the rescue at St. Ninian's and his encounter with the strange hare.
"Surely you don't mean Basil Stag Hare?" cried Constance. "Well, I never. Is that old eccentric still bobbing around? I expect we'll see him turn up with the Vole family around about lunchtime. I never knew Basil to miss the chance of a free lunch back in the old days."
The assembled creatures passed on a vote of thanks to Matthias for his resourcefulness and bravery. Matthias blushed. Then he sat listening intently while those who had taken part in the battle recounted all they could remember. In the aftermath of that memorable conflict, there was much speculation as to what the future held. Would Cluny recover from his injuries? Had his horde been so soundly defeated that they had learned their lesson, or would they be back? It was the abbot's opinion that Cluny and his rabble would not bother Redwall again. Their leader's injuries would doubtless prove fatal. This statement was strongly opposed by the others, and Constance was elected to speak for them.
"Cluny is still the prime factor," said the badger. "That rat is physically tougher than we could ever imagine. It is only a matter of time until he recovers sufficiently to attack us again."
Constance pounded upon the table with a heavy paw, emphasizing each word.
"And make no mistake about it. Cluny the Scourge will attack Redwall again. I'd stake my life on it. Think for a moment. If Cluny were to give up the idea of conquering this abbey, he would lose both face and credibility with the army he commands. Furthermore, and most important of all, word would spread across the land that Cluny was not invincible, that he could be beaten by mice. This would mean the end of Cluny as a legend of terror.
So you see, when Clooney recovers, he will be virtually forced to mount a second assault upon Redwall.
There was a sober silence around the table. The abbot arose. He had arrived at a decision.